Okay, let's talk tonight about the limits of chesed. Why would I like to talk about that tonight? Well, we talked a few weeks ago about Megillat Rut, and the main word, or one of the main words of Megillat Rut, is that word chesed, right? Rut is the individual who embodies chesed in a way that's unprecedented. She's the one who stands by her mother-in-law. It's Boaz's expression to her, what a person that you are. You stand for chesed, you stood by your mother-in-law, and then you stood by her again afterwards, even when you came into Eretz Yisrael and so forth. Ultimately speaking, Boaz is the one who's seen as the second Gomel chesed. He's able to stand by his word and his responsibility and so forth. It's the Midrash. The Midrash says we don't learn any halachot from Megillat Rut. There's no tameh, there's no tahor, there's no kasher, there's no pasul, there's none of that sort of stuff. What is it? It's to tell you about the importance of chesed. So it's important always to follow that up by talking about, well, what are the boundaries of chesed? To what extent do we talk about the virtue of chesed? The word chesed in the Torah, and one of the most surprising occurrences, was a few weeks ago in Parashat Kedoshim. It's another reason to talk about this tonight, because we didn't give a class on Kedoshim. I think we did Rut that week. Here it is in the first source. It's in the context of the Isurei Arayot, the women whom were forbidden to sleep with. It says the pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yod Zayin, V'isha sheyikach et achoto bat avivo bat imo, a person who sleeps with, I mean, literally it says yikach, it's not really kiddushin. Well, that's the way the pasuk says it, the rabbis talk about that. He sleeps with his sister, whether it's his sister from his mother or from his father. V'ra'ayet ervata, v'hiteret ervato, chesed hu. What a surprising words. It's a chesed to sleep with your sister? V'nichretu le'ine b'nei amam, and you should know they'll be cut off. He'll have to bear the burden of his sin. What type of statement is that? What's with the word chesed? It's the most surprising context to mention chesed. Chesed, we generally speaking, translate as some sort of kind act.
Is it the only time in Torah it's said?
I don't know. It's certainly the most prominent time.
It says it other times, chesed, the word.
In Torah? Where else? I'm sure it does.
Chesed shalomet, no?
So there's other places, but this is the most famous. I mean, what does it mean over there? Noser chesed la'alafim, it's kind acts. Again, it could mean different things in different places. Indeed, you have chesed over there as well, which of course is a kind act as well. In other words, it just doesn't seem to fit over here. And again, we had a Megillat Rut. It certainly meant the way we refer to it today. Ramban Nachmani is bothered by this, as are all the Mefarshim. And Ramban gives two interpretations, neither of which, you know, you're kind of expecting. The first one, Ramban suggests, it says, Ta'am chesed hu, al dat ha-mefarshim herpa. The word chirpa is like bizayon, something, an abomination, something embarrassing. So it's pretty much not the opposite, but it's very different than what you'd imagine the word chesed. Ki ha'anashim kulam b'tiv'am yihyeh lahem boshet b'chet ha'mecho'ar hazeh. Everyone, when thinking and hearing and doing this sort of sin of sleeping with your sister, realize how disgusting and how embarrassing it is.
Well, you could say like an extreme form of kindness is that, like, you give and take whatever you want.
All right, you're a little ahead of me, but indeed, again, you know the name of the class, it's the limits of chesed. Obviously, right over here, in some way, this is to be perceived as chesed, but an inappropriate one.
Right.
So Ramban brings proofs for this, that the word chesed sometimes would be translated as chirpa, as something embarrassing. He says, v'hu kalashon aramit. He says it would then be an Aramaic word. I love these circumstances where the Torah would be using a word which the Mefarshim suggest is actually Aramaic, which means to say that the word chesed, that's unreal. You're George Costanza with opening the door over there. That's unreal. No, it's all good. I mean, you enter with a gusto. Anyway, he cites from Unkelus, right? Unkelus in the context of this pasuk, ki herpahi lanu, writes Unkelus, are hasudahi. Which means to say that in Aramaic, apparently, the word hasuda, chesed, would be the translation of herpa. He quotes Targum Yonatan ben Uziel in Sefer Shemuel. V'samtia herpa, he translates it as chisuda. And he goes onward and gives other examples. In other words, he's got precedent for this, that in Aramaic, the word chesed is herpa. is something that's embarrassing. Rashi, in source number 3, before we read the second interpretation of Ramban, that's his first interpretation. It's Chesed hu lashon arami, harpa hasuda. He cites from Targum Unkelus over there in Bereshit Perek Lamdalet. Isn't that interesting? I mean, you do have that in rare occasions. Yeah, that's the suggestion.
That
this word
learns it from here?
No, I don't think so, because it's a translation of Aramaic to the word herpa, right?
Which language came first?
Well, I know that they, according to the Chachamim, Hebrew precedes all. In the Torah, we have Aramaic, Yigarsa Haduta, you certainly have. You have one or two places where you have Aramaic. All right, that's the first interpretation. Of course, the deficiency is... You want to know if you have to check Unkelus over here. He wouldn't, because he's not going to translate Aramaic into Hebrew. He's probably, we have to check it again, he's probably just going to do it the same word. If he's translating it as meaning Chirpa, he's just going to say Chesed, because of, for him, that's what it is. Anyway, all right. So then Ramban gives a second interpretation. Ramban's second interpretation is that this word Chesed in this context is a reference to the person, not to the act. But the person, yeah, check it, good idea. But to the person, you as the brother of this sister are a person who's responsible for doing kind acts to her. As a result...
They give you the reason why they give you the punishment.
Exactly. We're given the reason why this is really bad. You should have been doing chesed. You should have been marrying her off. You should have been caring about her. Instead, you're sleeping with her? How disgusting. Chesed was a reference to the guy, the ish. Your ish chesed, says Ramban. And you dropped it? Okay, that's the second interpretation. Of course, the deficiency is, it doesn't say ish chesed. It seems to be describing the action as chesed.
It's the lack of being and not lack.
Again, but the reason it's so bad is because you are a chesed person and you did this nonetheless. Kalana. So that's the same. Kalon is the same thing as harpa. So you see, Unkelus, he just saw me, writes, kalana, shame. Shameful act. That's okay, which might be Peshat over here. Really might be Peshat. All right, those are two interpretations. So either the word chesed is herpa, alternatively the word chesed is a reference to the person, the way we'd expect it, but describing the person, that's why the ironic act is so bad. And then Rashi...
Oh, what is it? It's like 10 of these Pesukim in a row.
This is the only time it says it.
What is it saying this to the other ones? After it's saying what the act is.
Doesn't describe it. Talks about that karet. Yeah.
So why single it out here?
I mean, both of the interpretations really work for that. Why do they both work? It's so disgusting when it's your sister. Your aunt? All right, that's gross. But your sister? Come on. Right? Yeah. What? Your sister? All right. My body. Okay. All right. A question. Anyway, that's... And that's
so the only understanding we have is just Ramban writing that he changes to the word hepa.
That's one interpretation of Ramban. And the second interpretation is you're an ish chesed.
What about all the other mefashim? They don't all ask the same question?
Rashi, we have these two interpretations in Ramban. On the page, just about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting, huh?
Isn't it a fascinating thing? And the better part is, and I mean this, till a couple of years ago, I had glossed, people talk about this, people love to talk about this, it always just passed over me. You're in the middle of reading about the Arayot, you get lost. I was in the middle of talking about something or another, maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, something like that. And someone says, it reminds me of when it says, I said, what are you talking about? It's not such pasuk. And so you open the Chumash and searching, whatever, ultimately speaking, you Googled it or whatever. He showed it to me. I was like, oh my goodness. Okay, subsequently, I then noticed people talk about it, whatever. It's right there. It's staring in the eye. It's the strangest thing. Certainly the way we use that word today. Rashi brings a midrash. The midrash is not going to be Miyashe Peshuto Shel Mikra, but it's a fascinating midrash nonetheless. In source number 3, Rashi quotes a midrash. It says, Rashi, umidrasho. It's midrash. Im tomar... Kain nasa ahoto. It's a question that the pasuk is, so to speak, you have to imagine he's not trying to explain Peshat. He's just jumping on that word and telling you the midrash, and that's what the midrash is doing as well. Because even once we read this, I don't think you'll be able to now read it back into the pasuk. But here's how it goes. You might have a question. The Torah is telling you, don't sleep with your sister. But, according to the rabbis, how is it that Cain and Hevel had children, or at the very least Cain had children, by marrying his sister? Oh, if he married his sister, wasn't he not supposed to do that? Didn't God, so to speak, set him up for that? says the Midrash, Chesed asa hamakom, livnot olamo mimenu. It was a chesed that God performed at that time. It was a allowance, you know, chesed as I'm allowing for this to go, in order to build the world from him and from them, as the Pasuk says in Tehillim, olam chesed yibane. Which is a fascinating statement. Now, again, is that what the Pasuk is referring to in this context?
It wouldn't make sense because...
Interesting. Says Charles, which the Mefarshim got bothered by, yikach, is almost as if, but again, this is what asur, right. You know, that the word yikach would make sense in that context, because that's the only time you would have been able to
I like it, but it doesn't make sense in the context.
In the context of the Pasuk, I don't think in any way it's miyashev pishuto shel mikra. But again, it for me... It gets me thinking the following. At some other point, maybe it was in the Gemara class, maybe it was on a Shabbat, I don't remember, we addressed this issue briefly as to what is the problem of arayot. What's the problem of a family member sleeping with another family member? I know it's taboo, and it's always been taboo. It's always been looked at from all cultures, and certainly Judaism, Torah, as inappropriate. Why?
Rambam says, it's too easy.
Rambam, oh, so it was in that class. Yeah, that's what it must have been. Yeah, it was in your class. What's that? It came with Gemara as well. It comes up. Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim, it's because God is trying to curb your sexual enthusiasm. Rambam writes that if you're so close with the family members, which you are, you're so free with them, you're going to end up having relations. You're going to have sex with them a lot more than if it was a stranger that you're getting comfortable with. That's his suggestion. So it's true, it's permitted for productive reasons and even for your experience in relationship and so forth, but curb it. That's his suggestion.
Can't you just say because it's if God calls it a violation?
Why? No, again, it's what? 100%. Says Charles, ultimately speaking, we follow because it's there. 100%. Enane la gezerot. Okay. Ta'ameh ha-mitzvah. We want ta'ameh ha-mitzvah. You know, what is, so it says Jack, but A, it seems to me they didn't know that. And B, I was going to say, right, I was going to say, I don't know that it's fact, but everyone tells me it's fact. Okay, health, that from the health perspective, which is interesting, the question is, and I don't have a full answer to this, the question is, and some Mefarshim would say yes, is are these sorts or any mitzvot specifically there for health? We have a mitzvah, according to the understanding of the Chachamim, Vushmartim Ol Nadan Afshotechim, is that you have to watch out for your health. Is God teaching you health lessons? Is that the issue? You know, there is the claim of some of the classical Mefarshim that kashrut is because it's healthier. If you accept that, then it means that he is doing that. What's that? Indeed, as well as writing that it's a hawk, you know, like one of those sorts of circumstances. But anyway, so that's possible. This is Rambam. Rambam Nachmani says, I don't know if he quotes it, but the Mishnah in Masechet Hagigah says that you're not allowed to be Doresh Arayot, the Parashot of Arayot, in the same fashion you would under other things. There's certain secrets there. There's certain things that are, you know, the same way Ma'aseh Merkava and Sefer Yechezkel, you're not supposed to do in an open fashion. All sorts of segments in the Torah and Nevi'im and Ketubim, says the Mishnah, we don't do it in such an open fashion. Arayot is a mysterious realm. Don't look into it. You're not going to understand it. That's the way it is. So, like a hawk, like the classic interpretation of a hawk. All right, but the description over here of the very world we know, according to the rabbinic understanding, was created through an act of arayot. It almost makes you wonder.
The Americans had no choice.
What's that?
The world would have ceased to exist.
That's certainly true. Why did God create it that way? Why didn't he create two beginning? I know you tell me the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, you need to start with one. But if this is inherently evil, it almost lends some credence to Rambam. There I am with the fingers. It almost lends credence to Rambam. In other words, that there's not something inherently evil to this, unless the word chesed over here is, yeah, it's evil, but I'm willing to start it that way. Why would it be in such a fashion?
Mashiach,
it almost lends... Indeed. So, you know, my response to that says, Jack, is, listen, if David is born, his ancestors are, okay, but are all sorts of problematic situations, quote unquote, the Yehuda and Tamar, the Rut HaMoaviyah, the Lot and his daughter, and so forth, which is the Moavi side. So you kind of already have this thought, maybe, certainly, this is an abomination. Certainly, it's asur. But maybe we're misinterpreting the inherent problem here. And it's not that it's this black and white disgusting thing, but it's in some way a little bit more nuanced. That's what this Rashi already gets me thinking. So here's the direction, two directions on it, an initial direction, and then in, then moving in a different one. Go ahead. Certainly. So listen, Charles, you're right. But if inherently, again, you're right, but if inherently there's something wrong with it, if it's disgusting, if it's terrible, you tell me it was something that we're proud of, practiced beforehand, maybe it was permitted, there were no specific halachot. Would you imagine that was something, if we have Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, wouldn't you think it would be explicit over there as well? Do you know what I'm saying? There's no Peshat in the Torah. The Torah tells us nothing. The Chachamim have it that way in the Midrash. As I taught your class Bereshit, do you know how many times you guys asked me this question? Everybody was infatuated with this question. Where did they have descendants from? Right. To me, the answer always is, who cares? My son, I'm, for real, I'm sorry to say it, like, who cares? What's the difference? How was Cain able to have children? Who's he sleeping with? Oh. I always say the fact that Torah doesn't have it in there is because it doesn't matter. Right. It's really insignificant. It might matter if you accept that it was his sister. Alternatively, if you ask...
Maybe I don't need to go with that.
That's right. If you ask my, again, the Chachamim go that way. If you ask my son, Yes, he's the numbers guy. He's got a few things he does. He always says to me, if I talk about Adam and he hears me saying the first human being, he says the first human being the Torah tells us about. I mean, he's not wrong. He's, Adam is the first human being that we know has Selim Elohim. He's the first human. He's 13. He's been saying this for a few years. I don't know if I explained this to him. My guess is that I ruined him early, that he asked me this question. This is my guess how. I mean, he would be able to tell you how he thought things like this. He probably asked me at a young age, listen, how did Cain have children? Where did the continuity come from? And I probably said to him, either they had sisters, but the Torah doesn't tell us that, or there were other people around that the Torah doesn't bother telling us because this is the significant lineage, and everything's going to be born out of this, which is not, it's maybe less traditional. The Chachamim will tell you this. There's nothing wrong theologically saying so. You know what I'm saying? It's not that the Torah, anyway, again, same, that's the my son approach. Anyway, here what I can tell you is, from this Midrash, here's the direction I want to bring you in initially. I want to bring you back to the first Pasuk in the Torah, of course, and then the fourth Pasuk in the second Perek. There's the famous discrepancy between these Pasukim. The first Pasuk in the Torah describes God by means of his name, Elohim. In Perek Bet, Pasuk Dalet, the Pasuk describes him as Bihibaream, the creation of the world. Biyom Asot Adonai Elohim. There's a reference to God as being both Yodke Vavke and Elohim. And the Chachamim picking up on this discrepancy, in addition to the order of Eretz and Shamayim, it's Bet Shamayim, Bet Hilel, a Machloket and Masechet Hagigah. But for our purposes, the difference between God's description of himself in these Pesukim is significant. It's one of the first first Rashis al HaTorah. He picks up on this. He says the first Pasuk says Bereshit bara Elohim. Later on, he's Hashem Elohim. In fact, it's Perek Aleph and Perek Bet, really. Perek Aleph is Elohim throughout. Perek Bet, he's Hashem Elohim throughout. Why so? Says Rashi in a famous statement from the Midrash. Initially, Ala b'machshava, so to speak, and we'll have to explain what this means in just a moment, God had the thought, he had the foresight, the vision of creating the world with Midat Hadin. We'll have to define that as well. Ultimately speaking, he realizes that the world can't be mitkayem in such a fashion. So what does he do? Shitefa l'midat hadin. He brings midat hadin and he combines it with midat harahamim. The yodke vavke meaning rahamim. Very often, it's so to speak God's actual name. It's the endearing, warm side. And Elohim milashon alim, the strength, the domineering. Quite the opposite. The Rahamim is the fluidity, and the Elohim is the rigidity. Okay, so what does that mean? I mean, what's he describing? First and foremost, in terms of the most basic interpretation to those words, what does Din and Rahamim mean? Din is rigidity. Din is the way it should be. I expect you all to sit at your seats and to listen carefully to everything I say without anything getting in between us. Listen and respond when I ask you to. What's the fluidity? What's the rahamim side? Well, listen, I do grant the fact that you're human beings and things are going to come up and this class will not go on in the way exactly as I predicted it. That's din and rahamim. So the world, so to speak, was supposed to follow one track, this divine, rigid track, the way things should be. Ultimately speaking, there was a certain fluidity. There was the ability for us to change the way things, so to speak, should be. That's the description. What does it mean he thought to do it one way and then he made a mistake? Is that the way we're talking about God? Is that, and we decided that because of a few words in the Torah? So certainly if you read Pesukim in the Torah, as we've mentioned on many occasions, the Pesukim seem to already demonstrate that there was in creation. You look at the Hachamim pick up on different discrepancies in creation. The most famous one, the Midrash describes how the trees were supposed to be, the bark would taste the same as the fruit. Etz piri, ose piri. But then what happens? The ground, quote unquote, rebels and trees' barks don't taste the same as the fruit. What's that a description? That's a crazy description. That's a deen God, quote unquote, was going to have it one way. And then Rahamim, he allowed for nature to develop in its own way with that fluidity. Human beings as well, the world in totality, existence as we know it. But again, it doesn't really explain to us what's the initial thought. So what many suggest is as follows. That initial thought, you know, I'll demonstrate it by means of a midrash in a second. That initial thought remains as an ideal, which means to say, if you were to try to live your life in the ideal sense, you're living in a midat hadin fashion. What does that mean? It means I'm literally looking for no excuses. I want a relationship with you, God, in which I do it the way it's supposed to be done. None of that fluidity, none of that looking the other way and smiling and winking and saying, hey, he's a human being, let me have him figure it out. None of that, let the world have its own track. Midat hadin mamash. That's the way many Shalach HaKadosh, Gaon Mivilna explained that Midrash with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is killed in this brutal way at the end of his life. The Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu finds that out from God in Masech Menachot and Daf Kaftet, and he turns and says, that's how you're treating this person who's going to be the greatest of scholars? You're going to kill him like that? Says God to him, shtok, keep quiet. What's the next words? Kach ala b'machshava lefanai. That was my thought. Which in simple interpretation means, get out of here. It's my own world. You can't understand me. If you combine it with this Rashi, if you combine it with Batahila ala bimachshava, it means this guy lived a life by my initial thought, by the ideal. And as a result, that's right, he may have stepped out of line a dot. You wouldn't be able to pick up on it, but that's why he's dying in such a fashion. He chose that ideal life, and I had that relationship with him as a result. I generally, it's my mystical, spiritual side, I envision our lives continuing in a fashion that we choose for ourselves. What I mean by that is you have people who live a life in which they give full credence and respect and approach life through this mystical lens. So if a Kabbalistic tradition has it one way, they will follow it in such a fashion. And if there's a threat of something in that context, sometimes that befalls them. You say, oh, you see? And so, you know, one quick story along those lines. Someone once, unfortunately, had a small tragedy, but in the end, everything was fine in their family. There was sickness with a child, and they went to a mikubal, and the mikubal said to them, listen, I know that you closed the window. So they came to me and said, we did close a window. I don't know how he knew that. I'm probably, very perceiving rabbi or whatever. So he says, what do I do now? Do I have to open the window? So I said, they closed the window. They had a window in the home and they closed it up.
They sealed it.
So I said, listen, I'm no Kabbalist, but here's my understanding. There's something called Sava'at Rabbi Yehuda HaHasid. Rabbi Yehuda HaHasid was one of the Rishonim, a very mystically inclined German rabbi. In his Sava'ah, he has certain famous things. You can't open other people's mail. One of the famous things he has in it is, don't seal windows. Without much of an interpretation that we'd understand, that's the claim. Now, as I mentioned earlier, he was a German rabbi. He was from Hasidei Ashkenaz, as a matter of fact, his sect of followers. To the best of my knowledge, I said to this, and I said, We as Sfaradim never accepted. Ashkenazim accepted Tzava'at Rabbi Yehuda HaHasid. We never accepted it. But I went further. I said, I'm going to tell you further. My understanding of your own life is you don't live your life in such a fashion, everything along the Kaaba. If you did, I would say you should be nervous, and you can even attribute this to happening as a result of it. It's not the type of life you've chosen for yourself. It's not what you've done. You're not consistent on it. So why would it be on this matter? I said, well, listen, I'm no Kabbalist. I was at my cousin's wedding. I was at Jeffrey Gindi's wedding 2 nights later. I was getting married to my cousin. I saw Chacham Azriel Mansour. So I approached him. I asked him. So 100% on both ends. He said, number one, Salat Rabiuda Hasid Svaradim Never. He said, and secondly, you can't attribute this to happening to them because if they don't live that sort of life. Why am I mentioning this in this context? That's how I understand that statement of Rabbi Akiva as well. Here's the Rabbi Akiva, the Midat HaDin individual. That's how I understand the HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medakdeki Mahatzadikim Kehut HaSe'ara. What does that mean? Because you're a righteous person, he treats you more harshly? No, you've chosen that rigid approach. You've lived by that ideal. As a result, it's a lot more dangerous. The closer you come to me, the more I'm going to be demanding of you to stand in that straight line. Certainly, but Harambam in that context is talking about finding your way to the middle on everything, and you're certainly seeking the middle. Over here, it's almost it's the Hasid that he talks about, who can and should on things seek out that extreme to a certain extent. That's the general perspective. So what does this have to do with us over here? The direction that I would go in this is as follows. That's Rabbi Akiva, whose life was that Midat Hadin. But the reason Rashi writes this, the reason the rabbis have this explanation of the God's vision of a world of deen is not only for the Rabbi Akiva, it's not only for the one or two individuals of each generation, it's for each of us. Are you kidding me? He expects us all to be tzaddikim? No. But he does, and we do, of ourselves, expect ourselves to live up to certain ideals. Which means to say, we are expected within our lives to draw lines. When something, technically speaking, and we know it, has a fluidity, is, I'll use the word, a chesed. It's beautiful. It's my sister. Look how I'm treating her. I'm bringing her into my home. Can you imagine? It's fantastic. And I'm treating her the rest of my life. And you could couch that and frame that as something that's objectively good. Isn't that fantastic? Says God in the Torah, chesed hu. It's true it's a chesed, but here I'm telling you you need din. Here I'm telling you to curb it. Here I'm telling you to cut it. I'm reading the pasuk in the most pishat, perhaps, fashion. Chesed hu means not harpa. It doesn't mean you're expected to do chesed to this woman and you're doing the opposite. It rather means this is an act of chesed, and that's why I'm telling you to stop it. Don't go that far. I'm telling you, don't go that far. Heke, like that. Sometimes you don't go that far. I mean, this approach, I would liken it, although it's not the same, if you'll turn to the other side, to the way Harambam describes Ahava and Yir'ah, famous words of Harambam, inscription of Harambam. Ahava, people generally, for good reason, describe as an emotional feeling. For Harambam, it's much more intellectual. For Harambam, many things are much more intellectual. But what is Ahava? It's an absolute mindset of God is everything. Can't get him off my mind. He likens it to Shir HaShirim, which again, we see as emotional. He sees as constant thought. Says Harambam, how do you get to constant thought of God? How could you achieve that? Writes Harambam in Perek Bet, V'chot Yesodei HaTorah HaLacha Aleph, Ha'el HaNichbad V'HaNorah HaZeh Mesaveh Le'ahavo U'L'Yir'ah Oto. God commands us to both love him and to fear him. Shene'emar, he quotes two pesukim. He'achi aderech le'ahavato v'yirato. How do you come to that constant thought, ahava, and in turn yirah will have to define? B'sha'ah, he tells you how to do it. She'yitbonen ha'adam b'ma'asav u'bru'av ha'niflaim gidolim, v'yir'e mehen chochmato, she'en la'erech v'loketz, miyad hu ohev u'mshabeach u'mfa'er u'mit'ave ta'ava gidola le'da Hashem ha'gadol. He says, just live life with open eyes. Live life with open eyes. See nature, understand wisdom, and that's love. It'll just be born out. The second you actually open your eyes to reality and realize the greatness. What's that? It's tougher in the city because you're thinking of nature in the classical sense, and we are disconnected from our origins and all that sort of stuff. But it's easier with it's easier with all the internet we have, so you could kind of watch it. You're right, it's not as inspiring if you're not actually there, but it's still, and furthermore,
yeah, I went to Africa, I never felt like closer to God.
How do you like that? Right. A lot of people tell me that. They say in the ocean they feel the closest to God, and which is more simple, but it's the vastness of the ocean, all that sort of stuff. Again, Harambam in his Sefer HaMitzvot adds an additional layer, the more religious layer. He says you can also get it through studying his words. In other words, if you appreciate not necessarily the content, but the grandness of his words, that's ahava, you're overcome. But certainly you'll see that with nature, you'll have it with study of nature and so forth. That's ahava, says Harambam. Where's Yirah? Explains Harambam, ukshem mehashev bedvarim ha'elu atzman miyad hu nirta la'achora v'yifhad v'yodea shu birya ketana shfela afela omedet bedaat kala me'uta lifnei temim deot. So as Harambam, Yirah is the automatic counter-reaction. And as a result, I run from it. So for Harambam, there's a well-known, we don't say it, the Syrians don't, there's a well-known piyut written by Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Gabirol for Rosh Hashanah. It has the words, if I remember correctly, Evrach mimmecha elecha, or elecha mimmecha. I'll run from you and to you. I'll run to you and from you. You do? Egyptians?
They say it after the...
How do you like that?
Before the
is it a nice tune?
Yeah, I mean, there's two piyutim we do. I think one of them is Shlomo Ibn Gabirol.
Fascinating. I mean, we have some of Rabbi, we even say some of Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Gabriel, but we don't do this one. Anyway, but the description is such a real description. It's the same thing. It's what Harambam's saying. You're going to run to him, then you're going to run from him. And when you run from him, then you're like, oh my goodness, I want to get to him. So you have a constant back and forth in life. Why do I mention this in this context? Because Ahava and Yirah for me is similar to that Din and Rahamim. Similar, it's not the same thing. But the idea being, you can't live a life in any relationship, certainly not with God, with a human being. You can't live a relationship in which you're constantly obsessed over that human being and on top of them, not in the physical sense, in a constant kind of... There has to be that space. It has to be the jolting backward. There has to be the space that's created. It's going forward. Regardless, again, for me, it's not a direct parallel, but the concept is there in as much as a life cannot be determined by an absolute. Mm-hmm. There's going to be that back and forth. Ramban Nachmani in his Perush al Torah here in source number 9, he attributes, he's certainly speaking Kabbalistically, but it's important nonetheless on the most peshat level, he says, Zachor and Shamor, mitzvot ta'aseh, mitzvot lo ta'aseh, are a reference to Ahava and Yirah. So it says, I mean, by definition, our relationship with God as per the Torah with mitzvot is both mitzvot ta'aseh and mitzvot lo ta'aseh. Our mitzvot lo ta'aseh is bracing myself, is standing back, is the, even though this is chesed, I'm going to stand back. No, but I want to get closer to God through doing that. It's the greatest looking sandwich in the world. I'm going to appreciate God and his creation and so forth. That's the deen, that's the standing back, that's the rigidity, that's the not rushing forward, even though I have a purpose and reason, that's the yiran. And the ahava is, I have an absolute love, so I'm going to perform this for him and so forth. The Mishnah in Masechet Avot, in Perek Aleph Mishnah Gimal, the famous statement of Antignos Ish Socho. Antignos Ish Socho says, don't worship the master in order to get a reward, rather just worship not to get a reward. Al tiyu ka'avadim ha-meshameshim et harav al-menad ha-kabil peras, ela heyu ka'avadim. Perek Avot, Perek Aleph Mishnah Gimal. What's that?
I said, I thought you were going to sing it.
He has a song about this. Oh, Ella, right, yeah, all right, I'm not so proficient. All right. Yeah, anyway, all right, I'll take it. Anyway, says Harambam, you want to know what that's a description of? That's Ahava. That's Ahava. The only reason, I just care about him. I'm just thinking about it. I don't need the reward. That's Ahava, says Harambam. Paradigmatic Ahava. Abraham Avinu Ahava. Then the end of the Mishnah, look at the last words. In source number 10, people forget about these last four words. Vihi morasha maim aleichem. The final words are, and the fear of God should be upon you. Do you follow? Description of Harambam is after. So he says, you can't just have ahava, says Antignos. Go with the ahava, and then Harambam doesn't even call attention to this. It's such a perfect parallel for him. What's that? Yeah. Reverence.
It's not really fear.
Good. Reverence, awe, whatever word you want.
That can happen.
Certainly. Certainly, the more I appreciate something, the more in turn I have that reverence, the awe. I'm using the word fear, but I mean the same thing as you. because I would probably, reverence, I would use the word ema. But
if you care about it, so you don't want to push it away. So you
that's right, and that's, it's so true.
If you're living in your life, if you're living in the street, you wouldn't care. And then once you start getting to know them, whatever, you have a different type of way of looking at them.
For sure.
But once you're in,
which is born out of ahava.
You'll have those proper boundaries. You'll have that reverence with that person.
If you do it right.
Exactly.
You see, Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote about this, talked about this all the time. In one of his well-known essays called Majesty and Humility, here in source number 10, you could read it in its entirety, you could even read these paragraphs. He writes, in my opinion, very beautifully. He spoke very beautifully. But majesty and humility, you already hear it in those words. Majesty is the majestic side, being like the king who spreads himself all over the place. The ahava. Humility is the yirah, is the coiling backward. Again, the din and rahamim to a different extent in how we live our own lives, right? I will find those moments for din, to abstain even though I want to be there. But at the same time, I understand within much of my life that it's going to be a rahamim. It's going to have a certain fluidity. Again, it's not a direct parallel, but it's about this oscillating back and forth, finding moments for one and for another at other times. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, as a matter of fact, he, at the end of this, I don't think I put it in the quote, he talks about two major examples, as I recall. One is Akedat Yitzhak. Think about Akedat Yitzhak. It's an absolute moment of ahava. Absolute giving over of himself, of his continuity, of his future, of his child, and so forth. At the top of the mountain, says God to him, now hold back. He came from being majestic human being to being the humility individual. It's the person who now has that humble demeanor. It's the one who, as he describes it, you're in the middle of the fight and you're able to knock the guy out, you have him down, and you turn away. You say, that's not for me. He gives the example. He says, think about a husband and wife who are at the peak of their love to one another, and then the woman goes to the bathroom. I don't think he says it specifically this way, and she sees some blood. And that's it. The blood turns her into a nida, and you have to turn back in that moment. And the power, he calls it tzimtzum. It's the description of God according to the Kabbalists. It's that ability to contract l'ma'an ha'emet, because we... Why do I mention all this in our context? Because it brings me back again to our pasuk. This is chesed. This is a fluidity which should be appropriate. It's my sister, but I'm doing this. I'm going to help her. Says the Torah, it is chesed. But tap into over here, din. Tap into over here, the ability to hold back. It is ahava in different words on a different angle. I'm doing this because I have an outpouring of actual love, because I have a care. Coil backwards. That's the danger of it. In other words, the claim would be the reason we need it to be like this is because there's a danger. I'll rationalize, and then a whole system and a whole relationship is gone because I was doing this just for the love, and any structure is lost. Absolutely. In other words, that would be the underlying concept over here of why you need the constant balance of ahava and yira, of din and rahamin.
Embodied in chesed in its mean sense, right? Not in its... I mean, we said Abraham was the best chesed ever. Now we understand that not to mean an extreme, but rather in
the right way.
In the middle. He was the middle of chesed.
Certainly. Certainly, and he was certainly. Certainly, but again, that's in his relationship with God. Absolutely, absolutely. Abraham knows where to, and is able to hold that back. That, in my mind, is the description here of chesed. But this, go ahead, Joe.
No, yeah, I think that's, if we use our example we were talking about, where the pasuk says you should do chesed with your sister. Chesed is if you're looking to continue to provide life. You're looking to provide existence, and understanding that everything around us comes from that source of existence. But when you continue doing that, not allowing other, you have to allow room that theme for other, that other person to be as well. Otherwise, you're just imposing more of yourself on them.
I gotcha.
When you look at this example, it just reminds me of Amnon and Tamar.
So he went and he...
But he's not doing it. Again, that's the Joe angle. In other words, you're not doing it with the... That's a rationalization. So he'll say, I'm doing it for chesed, yeah. But he's not doing it for chesed over there. Do you know what I'm saying? I'll give you a different example. I got you, but let's do... she's a hazita. Nobody's interested in her. You'll take her in. You're actually doing it. Let's say you actually do it with the right intention. And it's chesed, objectively speaking. It's still wrong.
Realizing her potential because you're limiting the possibility of what she
could do. I got you, Joe. I'm going to give you the.
Because you are the same
genetics. Joe, okay.
The same as
exactly. All right, so here's the different angle, and you'll like the different angle. It's along the same lines. It's not negating this first approach, but it's refining it. And it goes like this. It's inspired and really, to a certain extent, spoken out by Maharal, even though he doesn't do it on this pasuk. Maharal, if you recall, we spoke about a few weeks ago in the context of Parashat Shemini. Maharal has this vision, as do many, of our mission in life as being this mission to unify. It's a mission to unify in any and every aspect of our life, to find a certain synthesis. Human beings are the first creation that was not separated. We were separated initially, right? Adam and Hava, man and woman, but then we were told, come together. Human beings were the combination of the heavens, the Chelek Elohim Imal, the Neshama, the Tzelem Elohim, with the dust of the earth. Human beings were that perfect synthesis who were then told, combine, find unity, according to the rabbis, bring the rain down from the upper realm to the lower realm. That's our mandate as human beings. Continues Maharal in a different vein, but along the same direction. Source number 14 in his Nitiv HaAnava, he says, Yesh lefaresh ki ma she'asra haTorah arayot. Why is it that the Torah says that these relationships are forbidden? Ki al yedei hazivug haolam mitchaber umitkasher. Okay, the first statement is through zivug, through the relationship, through the relations. That's how you bring unity. You didn't answer the question. I mean, everything should be permitted, unified. God wants a unified world through these relations. So he hasn't really explained himself yet. Just says you need unity. In somewhat of a cryptic fashion, he describes for us, he gets us understanding that in an ironic twist, the reason the relatives are forbidden is because you'll affect better unity if you go after someone who's not related. So the way Rabbi Moshe Shapiro explains it in Source 15 is along the following lines. I'm using my own words. You know, we very often in these classes point out similarities, symmetries in the Pesukim. I say, you look at all of this parasha and all of this parasha, look how similar they are, right? But we don't stop there. The punchline always is, now let's find the difference. Right? Once you notice all the similarities, find the difference. And that's what the point and the message is over here. When I find identical twins, I look at the two of them and I realize how similar they are, but I'm not looking for how similar they are. I don't point out all their similarities. I point out what's different between the two. Right? When I look at things that are different, however, and they're put in the same room and put in the same context, I look over there not at what's different. They, of course, are different. I look at what unifies them. To have something that's truly coming together means that it's two beings who are looking at, and we're looking at it, something that brings them together. They're looking at the same. Unity means we're focused on a similar purpose. We're looking at the same thing, and that's what's drawing us together. It's not just, as a matter of fact, Rabbi Shapiro explains it from the following day. Rabbi Shapiro, who passed away just a couple of years ago, was, in my mind, one of the greatest thinkers in the last 30, 40 years ago, right? All the Rav Matis people don't know this. Rav Matis was very much influenced by him, as were, what's that? Yeah, as were many of the deeper thinkers of the last 20, 30 years. Rabbi Foreman as well. I don't know if you have Rabbi Foreman. He quotes him very often. I mean, it's certainly in his introduction. He was, I was lucky to go to several of his classes during his lifetime. He was a very deep thinker to the extent that if you weren't in line with his thought already, you didn't have a clue what he was talking about. So had a lot of unsuccessful endeavors in his class, but then they published his works after his death. So, you know, I was able to figure out a little bit from that. Anyway, and from some of the students. Anyway, so he says like this, he says, listen, look at the initial creation of mankind or of humankind according to the rabbis. According to the rabbis, they noticed the Pisukim say at one point, Zacharu nekeva bara otam, that God created both male and female. And then the next time it says, but female was taken from male. Were they created together or they created separately? The Gemara Masech Berachot and Daf Samech Aleph says, listen, they were created together kind of with this grafted nature. They were both in one. And then God had to separate them. Why separate them? That's fantastic. We were together. Couldn't find better unity than that. So of course now there's a mission to unify. But his suggestion is we weren't really unified then. When we were together, we were looking at different things. We were looking at everything that was different than one another. We had different vantage points. When we're separated, that's true unity when you come together. The description in turn goes like this, according to my understanding. Hesed hu of the Isurei Arayot, of your sisters, you guys are already together. As Joe said, you share the DNA. You guys are already the same family. That's not true unity. You guys need to go out and find someone who's different. That's a true bond. That's a connection. That's a unity. You guys being...
What's that? Back to that.
Again, it is a chesed, meaning, you know, similar to the Harambam, but in a different direction. You're so similar to one another, it's going to be so natural that it's not going to be a true union.
Right?
Like, because you're so similar, it's... Again, the word ideal is hard, because if it's ideal, then it's perfect. But it's too similar. That's the answer. It's too comfortable. And in it being too comfortable, you lack the challenge, and in turn, you lack a true unity.
Why is it nasty? Why do we also find it nasty? There's so much psychology behind it.
Again, the answer to that question is a mystery, as I said at the beginning. What I can tell you is, why is it nasty? What's disgusting about it?
It's not like this whole class disgusting that of the question. I
will repeat to you again, to a certain extent, the way we began. According to the rabbis, the world was created by God upon this. If it's as nasty as we imagine it is today, why would he do that?
Why did he kill his brother right after?
No, come on. Alternatively, although he doesn't have children yet, it's afterwards, for kind yet that, right? Go ahead.
It could be preconceived that the way we view it
is as a result of the Torah. That's what Charles... I love you, Charles.
No,
it's such a religious take. I'll accept it. But
the same way you look at a ham and cheese sandwich.
I got you.
I don't want to eat that.
If you do, the Midrash says you're not supposed to.
Right.
Maybe
it's that same approach.
I got you.
Never
I got you. The problem is, and maybe it's not a problem, is that, because maybe you'll say it's inspired by the Torah as well, is that surrounding cultures and religions have the same approach.
Uh-huh.
Nobody, even if you're an atheist, to the best of my knowledge, thinks it's okay to get married, even before medicine, to get married to your sister. Again, what I will tell you alternatively, at the very least, the enduring lesson for me in this pasuk goes as follows. This could be, if we get super rational, even emotional, could not only be appropriate, it could be great. 2 points. A, it's still wrong, right? The woman who's a Nida, Avraham and Hara Moriah, about to slice his son in half, this could be great. Outpouring of love. It's still wrong. It's tapping into the Midat HaDin of existence and saying there is fluidity and I have that outpouring of Ahava in this moment, but I now need a recoil. I now need to stand back and let it, and I have to exert that strength, that tzimtzum. Secondly, but along the same lines, it just extends it further. So what is inappropriate about this? The inappropriate thing about this, it's along the same lines. Certainly, it's along the same lines. It's this outpouring and rushing of wanting to do it all, but not being able to hold back. Yeah, it's along those same lines. Again, not being able to have the restraint. Exactly. Not being able to be mitzamtzim is the way the Kabbalists would say it. And then the last point of this was, okay, can we refine it a little? Can we understand why you need to hold back? What is it about that biological bond that you already share? Potentially, that's the ironic word in the pasuk again. The chesed, it's the first explanation goes like this. It's chesed, and I don't want you doing chesed. The second one admits to that, but it says, the reason I don't want you doing it is because it is chesed, right? And the first approach is, it's chesed, sometimes you need to move outside of the realm of chesed. It's ahava, sometimes you need to move into yira. The second approach is, the reason is because it's too chesed. As a result, that's not true unity. Since you're so similar to begin with, you're not actually looking at the same thing and coming together in that respect. What are the enduring lessons from this sort of class? Well, several fold. Number one, the lesson of restraint. There's no question. That's what's rushing through this throughout, no pun intended, right? It's this boundaries. That's the pasuk. It's chesed, and I'm telling you, don't go for it. And secondly, it gives a new perspective, or it sharpens our perspective of what does it truly mean to seek unity? What do I mean by that? What does it mean as our mission in life? So you can, and many of us are born into wonderful situations in all respects, in religious respects, in potential to affect society, to affect our families, to affect the community, and so forth. We're born into that. Chesed who? So just rush forward with that. Alternatively, step back and say, but where is a realm that within that challenge I can now carve something new that wouldn't have been there? Do you follow how I'm expanding that second point a little bit further? This is too easy. You're too connected already that it's not an enduring connection. The true connection will be when you look for the same thing, when you carve it and make it your own separately with the person you don't know, who's not a family member. In turn, in all aspects of our life, that's true. When it's too easy, it's not wrong. It's just that you have to expand further. In the general scheme of our existence, of our mission in life, yeah, it is wrong. If that's all you ended with, if you just pushed it forward a little bit, you didn't carve out a little bit separately, it was too much chesed who in your life, yeah, you've failed to maximize your potential. You haven't been able to run it forward. The Yitzhak and Abraham, continuity, I always say, is Yitzhak continuing it, but making it his own. If you're not making it your own, then really, I mean, yeah, you've done something, you've continued it, but you haven't really affected it to the extent that you could. That's the chesed who. Yeah, you are connected, and yeah, you're going to build a beautiful family and just continue the name and so forth, but you didn't bring something else in. You didn't actually come together. You didn't actually affect that ahdut, which is expected of you. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.